Altitude is a monthly podcast brought to you by NATS, the UK's leading air traffic control company. In the show, we talk with industry experts about current and prominent aviation topics. In this episode, we're joined by the chief executives of British Airways, the Airport Operators Association, and NATS, to discuss the impact of the pandemic and what the future holds for UK aviation. Enjoy the show, and find out more at nats.aero/altitude.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Altitude, our monthly aviation-themed live stream. My name is Aidy Dolan and I'm an air traffic controller at Heathrow Tower. And I'm delighted to be back here in the hot seat for what promises to be an absolute belter of a show. You don't need me to tell you that the last 18 months has been a period of massive turmoil for the aviation industry. And even now, as some parts of the world begin to recover, UK air traffic still remains at about 50 to 60% of 2019 levels. So, what are the long-term prospects for aviation in the UK? What needs to be done to help us learn to live with COVID and to get people flying? From rebuilding passenger confidence and investment in new technologies through to airspace modernization and the need to tackle the sustainability challenge, the list of priorities for the industry's leaders are very long and very complex. So, I'm extremely fortunate to be joined by three big hitters for what I'm certain is going to be a fascinating discussion. It gives me pleasure to welcome Karen Dee, the Chief Executive of the Airport Operators Association.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Sean Doyle, the Chief Executive and Chairman of British Airways.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Eddie.
And last but by no means least, my ultimate boss and the man who personally pays my wages, Martin Rolfe, the CEO of NATS. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Eddie. Good to see you.
The aim for me at the end of this show is to remain one of Martin's employees, so we'll see how that goes. As ever, you can put your questions to the panel throughout the show, and we will try and get through some at the end, but this is going to be quite jam-packed. So let's crack on. The passenger journey starts at the airport. You get on an aeroplane, and then you're looked after by air traffic control. With that journey in mind, I'd like to start at the airport with Karen and ask you to give us a brief, if you can, summary of the last 18 months. And I'm guessing that it hasn't been the same picture for all airports, Karen.
I suppose it's not been the same picture for entirely all airports, but it's been pretty bad everywhere. And I think, you know, at the risk of sounding like a stuck record, for my members, this has been the worst crisis ever. If you think about where we were as aviation, you know, supporting a million jobs, creating, you know, a billion a week in GDP, to suddenly see, you know, traffic fall through the floor and go back to, you know, 1980s passenger levels was just awful. And let's not forget, I think for one of the things I'd like to try and remind politicians about is, as a sector, we were the first ones in to this pandemic. As soon as, you know, we started to see restrictions and reports of this new virus in China, we started to feel that, you know, February, March, before the rest of the economy. And yet we are going to be the last ones out. And that's hugely frustrating. So, you know, for most of the airports last year, you know, typically passenger numbers down minus 98%. And although we had a little bit of, you know, an uptick in the summer when, you know, we had the travel corridor process, you know, but just as we got into the autumn, when everybody else in the rest of the economy was eating out to help out, you know, we then started to see further restrictions be put in place. And so over the summer last year, my members said they lost about 2.6 billion in lost revenue. You know, minus 98%, that's a huge amount at a and with a lack of clarity of where they were coming through. Now, clearly, when we got to autumn, winter, you know, we thought perhaps, you know, we were at the end of the that summer 2021 would be much better. Actually, for my members, it hasn't been. And although things might be feeling a bit better now, for the key summer period, again, most of the airports will have seen broadly similar, if not worse, revenue losses as they did last year. And, you know, in January this year, UK airports were losing £5.3 million a day. And the government, you know, came and said, here you are, we're going to give you some business rates support. But by the way, you can only have it for 6 months and it's limited to £8 million per airport. Now, of course, if you're Heathrow, you pay £120 million a year in business rates. So we've been, you know, really quite disappointed about the way that the government has treated our sector. And we, you know, airports feel they've a little bit been singled out for sort of special treatment. I suppose the optimistic side of me says, okay, well, we're beginning to see our way through. We've had, you know, the red, amber, green list, and we've got some things coming back, which hopefully will set things on a good path. And I know we'll come on to that shortly. But for us, you know, I can't stress enough that the impact that this has had on, you know, airports' business models, on their investor confidence, and of that in terms of the debt levels that they've had to take on. And I would remind government, the vast majority of airports stayed open throughout the pandemic, even though it might have made more financial sense to shut down completely. But they didn't do that. And we, you know, we supported PPE flights, you know, medicines flights, air ambulance, all those other things that aviation delivers. And we did that largely at a cost to, you know, our balance sheets. You know, we're lucky. We're critical national infrastructure as airports, and we're long-term investors. So, you know, I'm optimistic about the future. It's just a shame that we have to go through what we've had to go through. So I will pause there. I'm not going to go into the future yet. But
thank you very much, Karen. A fairly grim picture. Sean, you're coming up to your 1 year anniversary as the CEO of British Airways, and unbelievably, you don't have quite as much grey hair as I do for some reason. But you've gone from flying millions of passengers around the world to flying cargo, really, and collecting a whole load of PPE, and that can't have been easy either.
Yeah, no, look, I'd echo what Karen said. It's been the most brutal crisis we've ever seen in the industry. You know, we've been around 102 years, and if you add up all the other crises and put them together, it is dwarfed by what we've been through over the last 18 months. You know, I'm here a year, but I was actually over at Aer Lingus for the first 6 months of the crisis. So I've had 18 months of two versions of this. And, you know, it's been very, very hard on not just the balance sheets and the profits of the business, but everybody working in aviation has been through. You know, I think probably, you know, the worst sector in terms of our people and the impact has been aviation, because as Karen said, first into it, last out of it. And, you know, that's been very unfortunate, because I do think if we'd looked around us and looked outside of what was happening in the UK and what was happening in other economies who appreciated the criticality of aviation to their economic model, we would have been much quicker coming out of the traps, and we would have recovered the industry over the summer. And we haven't. We are making progress now. But if you look at economies in Europe and the US who rebuilt aviation quicker, their outcomes in terms of the pandemic and infections and all the other things we're worried about were actually better than the UK, where we ended up closing up for longer. So, you know, we are where we are. I think we got to reflect on why we ended up in a situation where the UK ended up having the most handicapped aviation system of any country in Europe, when our reliance on it as an island for our economic model is greater. And I think, you know, I'm not going to go into a process of giving out about government, but I think, you know, it's only fair and honest that we reflect on that and make sure that we never repeat it, because aviation contributes about 1.6 million jobs to the UK economy. It's about 4% of GDP. That's a higher proportion than any other economy in Europe. Yet we were letting it wither on the vine for the last, 12 months, certainly. I could understand the measures we had to take in the depth of the pandemic, but we were slow coming out of the traps. But we are making progress. But, you know, everything we do, we could have done quicker. And I still think there's an awful lot that we need to mop up here, you know, be it the reduction in the requirement for testing, the cost of testing, the reduction in the red list, the removal of hotel quarantine. You know, Germany has zero countries on its traffic light red list equivalent at the minute. And I think we still have about 52. So either we're very much, you know, ahead of the curve in terms of Germany, or they're ahead of us. And I would argue that, you know, when I look at their rates and their infections, you know, they're doing as well as better than us, but they're not hampering a critical sector as much as we are. But look, we're focused on rebuilding, and you know, that's what the winter will be about for British Airways. And I think there's lots of things that we can learn from the pandemic that we can take positively into the future. And, you know, I would say that we'll come out of the pandemic, actually, I think, a better business. And I think the coordination across the industry is something that we can harness as well and make sure that we use to build a more resilient sector more broadly.
Excellent. And I mean, finally, Martin, we're used to dealing in NATS with very, very high volumes of air traffic. Personally, to go into Heathrow Tower and ask the controller that I'm taking over from where the next inbound is, and for them to have to wind the radar out to show me the solitary aircraft over the Irish Sea is certainly a memory of COVID that I'll take with me. You've had to refocus NATS's priorities in that period. What's it been like?
I think probably exactly as Karen and Sean have sort of described, it's been a pretty terrible time. Now, there's always bright spots in there, and the teamwork and the fact that you've got a crisis to deal with brings everybody together. For me, I think it's been an opportunity to learn more about corporate finance than I ever had any idea that I would need to. It wasn't something that I necessarily got into this business to do. I love aviation, probably like everybody who's involved in it. And for me, it was just so depressing to see how low we sank in that sense as an industry. And I completely agree with Sean and with Karen that, you know, first in, last out, essentially no sector specific help at all. Literally nothing apart from the furlough and things that everybody else had access to, and a sort of a lack of appreciation that despite all of that, we're still moving aircraft with PPE on. We're still doing ambulance flights, medical flights, security, trying to keep all of our people employed gainfully, trying to keep controllers trained, engineers keeping the system working, just the same as both Sean and Karen in terms of her members. But actually trying to do all of that whilst at the same time, cash just going out the door on a daily basis with no end in sight. And I think, you know, to Sean's point around the travel rules, there is no doubt in my mind that certainly towards the first half of this year, the public in the EU sort of gave up, in the UK gave up. You know, it was too complicated. It was too hard to understand what to do. The rules were too difficult to, you know, it wasn't worth it. Just do something else. And that's a real shame. And I think as Sean rightly said, we're still struggling to get that traction that says we should be back to frictionless travel. We had if not the best, certainly close to the best vaccination program in the world. And we singularly failed to make really any use of it from an aviation sector perspective. But like others have said, yeah, you don't want to dwell on the past. We will come out of it, I think, a strong industry. Everybody's had to sharpen their pencils immensely. There has no doubt been some good come out of it as well, which I'm sure we'll get on to. But it is certainly a period that I will look back on with 70% despair and 30% sort of enjoyment. It's been a difficult challenge to crack for sure. And while we're not out of the woods yet, I do think we're heading in the right direction.
Excellent. So that's the past. I've done that. That's pretty bleak. Karen, give us something to smile about, please. What are your members' expectations as airports for the autumn and winter period ahead?
I'm not sure it's going to be something to smile about, but maybe it's less. And I do love the way that we're moving on. We're done with COVID now, which I'm fully subscribed to, by the way. I mean, I think it is much better. And I think in terms of what's happened, the most recent announcements from government have been, you know, maybe I've become overly pessimistic about where we would get to during the 18 months. And so actually I was pleasantly surprised with what the most recent announcement, and you know, that they were signalling that we'll move away from PCR on day two and all of those things. So I do feel more optimistic than I anticipated, actually. Having said that, of course, winter is normally quite a difficult period. It's not when we make the most of our money, and no doubt Sean will tell you more about that. And so I think where we are as airports is that we are looking to the future, but actually that's about really gearing up over the next, you know, few months, ready for spring, summer, and continuing our engagement with government to make sure that we are ready and in a great place to be able to, you know, take advantage of that. Because I think We are still lagging behind the EU and other countries and our competitors. We know that, airlines, it's difficult for a lot of my members to keep airlines in with the routes that they want. If you're not a high capacity airport and you have to really compete to attract airlines into you, that's going to be a big job over the next, few months, certainly. And for some, it'll take quite a long time to build back. But they're up for that challenge. They always are. UK aviation is highly competitive, and the airports will want to do as much as they can to make sure that they are ready for spring summer. But I have to say that the government is going to have to play a role in this. I wouldn't want, and I don't want them to think that it's job done as far as they're concerned, because the scale of impact that we've had, it's going to take a while for us to rebuild and to bring back the kind of connectivity that we think the country needs. So we are optimistic. It's not all going to bounce back in one go, though. And I think that's not just about financial support from governments. It's actually about getting the policy framework right as well. And perhaps more, importantly, the one thing that would just be great for us to see is, ministers being positive about international travel and saying how important we are, because there's been a real lack of that. And I do think that has, when Martin said that, some people, travellers gave up on travelling in the UK. Well, that's because some ministers were saying, it's OK to travel. Others were saying, no, you shouldn't. It's really bad. And, it was just such a mixed message that no wonder. So getting that right, if we can get ministers, all of the reshuffled ministers back onto a kind of more positive framework, I think that will be a big help for us.
Yeah, definitely. And let's just look at who we've got on our screen right now. Karen and Sean, you've got the boss of Nats in the hot seat, being watched, I'm sure, right now by millions across the globe on Nats Altitude. If you could ask him anything, as in ANSP, for your airline and your members to help you in that recovery, what would that be, Sean?
Yeah, well, I think... if you look at where we were in the last cycle, the summers in 2018 and 2019 generally were very tricky all across Europe. And I think it just emphasized the need to modernize airspace. And I know that's not something which is in the gift of Nats, but I think, we're very well respected as an aviation industry in terms of thought leadership. I think, the processes we use and the way we manage, the complicated airspace in the UK and in London catchment particularly is probably world class. And I think we can play a role of thought leadership, of also, I think, extolling the virtues of modernization through the sustainability lens, because there is a massive opportunity in terms of carbon footprint of the industry that kind of can be unlocked pretty quickly without waiting for new generation technologies to come along, if we create, say, European single skies and manage that airspace far more efficiently than we do today. So we're ready to support. We're ready to kind of advocate on behalf of that agenda. And, I think people like Martin and Richard Moriarty and the airlines and, the airports, we have got together a lot over the course of this crisis and basically advanced our collective agenda very effectively. Maybe not as effectively as we'd like, but the coordination has been good. And I think we can carry that into the future as well. I think certainly in terms of the efficiency of the system, the sustainability of the system, there's a huge role that I think we can play in terms of modernization of airspace.
Okay. Karen, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I actually share a lot of that. But for me, modernization is one of the key things. And it is going to, not only for sustainability, but also just for the efficiency and the modernization of it. It won't take that long before we start seeing capacity issues again and, being, I hope anyway, back to where we were before. And I think just on the, I wanted to pick up on Sean's point about us working together as an industry. And I think that's really important, because certainly as airports, when we start to, our communities have had it really quiet and peaceful for the past 18 months. And as we start to build back towards success, that is going to create some tension just at the time when we want to be, improving efficiency and doing all of those things. So I think it's, modernization for me is the kind of biggest challenge out there, but also one of the potential, a real winner as well, or it can be a real winner. So, you know, I've got great hopes for it, but I also think it's a big one. Yeah. Not going to be easy to deliver. But yeah, I'm surprised the commitment there across the industry is really strong, I think.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you should say that, because something that I hadn't thought of was one of the things that maybe has come from this pandemic is leaders like yourselves maybe coordinating a little closer in a crisis, and maybe those relationships will continue beyond this. And Martin, so your thoughts as the leader within NATS, and what you need from airlines and airports that NATS serves as we get out of this?
Well, I'm really glad that Sean and Karen both at Airspace Modernisation and Resilience and Sustainment, because that was my list as well. Perhaps not unsurprisingly, you are absolutely right, AD and Karen, that from my perspective, I think in some of these areas we've worked together better than ever before throughout the pandemic. Airspace modernisation, I mean, that would have been so easy to put on the back burner over the course of the last 18 months, but actually we haven't. Yeah, we've come together as a group to actually keep that moving. Now, it's a slow process and it's full of politics. And Karen, I couldn't agree with you more. The challenge of, I'm already starting to get letters about overflights again, and why is the airspace changing? Well, actually, it's not. These are just the flights you used to have that are coming back, which is a good thing, obviously, from an aviation perspective. But you're absolutely right. If we don't modernise the airspace, we won't get the dividend of sustainability, the CO2 reductions from direct routings, less holding, all those kind of things. But we also won't get the capacity that we really hope we're going to need over the course of the next 5, 10, 15 years. And when you start to look at the flows of traffic, the future flows of traffic, I think one of the things that we have done really, really well across the industry over the course of the last 18 months is the short-term planning. Now, I know there's been a lot of, we put stuff in, then we cancel it when the rules change, which is understandable. But actually, we've been really well coordinated between all of the organisations to say, actually, what do we need to be supporting? Because we're very demand-driven, as you would expect. We've got the demand from the UK-based carriers and UK-based airports, but also overflights and so on. So for us, I think one of the biggest things has been making sure that we can make sure that we are not in any way a break to the recovery of Sean and Karen, and make sure that we can deliver whatever they need whenever they need it. And that's been an interesting challenge over the period. 1,600 or so air traffic controllers, all of whom we want to go from sort of zero to as close to 100% as we can possibly get within the space of a very short period. And I think all of that collaboration has really worked out well. I think if there was another piece in there, I think there's a resilience piece in there as well. We were talking about this separately earlier before we started this this live stream, but actually making sure the entire system is resilient to whether it be technical failures, whether it be weather incidents, whether it be other kinds of events, but making sure that we are a resilient industry, just the general sort of issues that we used to see but used to have big impacts on us. I mean, maybe we can treat those a little differently now. I think we've got a better way of dealing with a lot of that as a result of the pandemic.
Yeah, definitely. And I think in every crisis, there's always going to be opportunities to bring some positivity out of it. And if there was one thing, some blocker that exists when we're still at 100% movements, and now we're in this suppressed kind of traffic volume, if there's one change or improvement that you could make as we come out of this, Sean, what would that be?
Is that AD, I suppose, in the context of the broader industry or air traffic management?
That's a broader industry question.
Yeah, look, I think, we mentioned it earlier, but every time I go onto any forum or any panel, sustainability is top of the agenda. And I think the questions being asked to the industry are, going to, I think, scale in terms of intensity and expectation that we have a roadmap to deal with it. And we do have a roadmap to deal with it, but it will take time. But we have some opportunities right now that we can pursue with the right government policy. One, I think, is sustainable aviation fuel. We've committed to a mandate of 10% by 2030. We flew our flight with sustainable aviation fuel, our perfect flight, a couple of weeks ago. We think the UK could build, up to 14 or 15 plants in places where jobs are badly needed, but it needs government policy to support it, both in the form of seed funding and price certainty. So I think the quicker we move on realizable opportunities right now to make aviation more sustainable, the better. And considering we're an island economy, where 80% of people coming in and out of this country fly, the sooner we kind of kick off on that path to you know, aviation net zero by 2050, the better. And I think with our sort of experience with our energy companies, or experience in setting standardization for fuel, with the sort of opportunities we have, which are developing, you know, I think we're sort of there at the sort of incubator stage, but we just need to push on now and kind of drive this into something more concrete. Because I think other people like the US and Europe are starting later, but my guess is they're going to get there quicker.
Yeah.
And we've got to stop the navel gazing and just make some commitments.
Yeah, you wander through Heathrow Airport and there are posters everywhere talking about the elephant in the airport. And I guess that's true of all of your members, Karen.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you were going to ask me the question about the one thing I would learn. So I'm just going to ask that one person.
Go for it.
That's all right, just to be cheeky. And I agree entirely with what Sean just said. But one thing that I think has highlighted, the pandemic has highlighted for me, is just how well the sort of, you know, the aviation sector and partners work together. And, you know, when I first came into this role, because my background's not aviation, it was transport, but, you know, people always said, well, aviation is an ecosystem. And I think entirely we have seen that through the pandemic. The one thing that my members are all worried about, and it's the part that doesn't quite fall into that ecosystem, is border force and managing the border. So if you know, talk about resilience and all of those other things, the one lesson I would be, you know, taking away and trying to get government to talk about is how do you get border force to adopt the mindset that the rest of the aviation industry has, because I don't think it's there yet for quite a long way. So, you know, that's a strong one for me to see what we can get going with that. Obviously, sustainability.
Karen, I couldn't agree more. It's you know,
the mindset really is completely different, isn't it? Yeah,
and just I definitely want to give you that opportunity to talk a little bit about sustainability, because it really has become the dominant narrative during the period. So, Karen, what are the thoughts of you and your members of growing out of this, but in a economically sustainable way, an environmentally sustainable way?
Well, all of my members I suppose I shouldn't have been surprised, because we only signed the sustainable aviation commitment in February 2020. As a sector, we all signed up to the net zero, you know, first in the world as a sector to do that. So, you know, all of my members have said, well, it's not optional. You know, if we want to continue to grow and to operate, it's just something that we have to do. So we've got a plan, let's get on and deliver it. And so, you know, that they are, you know, remarkably very up for all of the things that need to happen, all the investments they need to make, you know, trying to understand, you know, there are things that we can do as airports, you know, whether it's looking at our power systems or, you know, car parking and, you know, electric fleets, all of those things. But actually, what we also need to be focusing on is, well, how do we surface, you know, all of the things that Sean and his counterparts will be doing as airlines? What do we have to do as airports then to help support that? What's our role in that? You know, how do we need to adapt to that? And I think, you know, without exception, the airports are all, you know, fully committed to that. It might be quite challenging to get some of those investments, but actually, you know, it's just something that they've all accepted has to be done. So actually, I'm really pleased with that commitment. Because it's, you know, it's absolutely essential if we want to continue to survive and grow, and that's what they want to do. So,
yeah, Martin, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Nats was one of the founding members of Sustainable Aviation. But what does that actually mean in terms of drifting through to controllers talking to aeroplanes and actually reducing this carbon footprint?
So there's quite a lot. You're absolutely right, Hayley. You were one of the founding members, which is which was very sort of impressive foresight, actually, if you go back to that, because it really wasn't top of the agenda at the time, or certainly not as I recall. From an air traffic perspective, it's really about making sure that we give straightest routes and we don't delay. Now, the first one we sort of dealt with the discussion about airspace modernization to a degree, but it kind of links into the point around what's the one thing you would change. And this is a challenging one because it involves human behavior. But if we could switch to a world where we cared about on-time arrival rather than on-time departure. And I recognise this is going to have some interesting challenges for both Karen's members and Sean and his team. But if you look at some of the examples we saw over the pandemic period, when obviously there was a lot less traffic, we still see aircraft getting airborne because they were able to. Then they'd arrive, I think in one case we talked about 40 minutes early, and actually then held for 39 minutes before landing and wasted time and fuel and created CO2. Now, actually, it's clearly difficult to get people to realise that actually you might not get on the plane, or the plane might not depart at the time it says, but actually you're going to arrive at your destination on time. That ought to be what people care about. Now, I think we've conditioned people to care about when they push back, or actually, I think in many cases, they read the ticket time and think that's the time you should actually be airborne, when in fact it is pushback time. But we've conditioned people that it's about what time you depart, and you wouldn't do that in any other walk of life. You wouldn't say, yeah, well, don't worry, I'm going to leave my house at 10 o'clock this evening to come and see you. Well, okay, what time are you going to arrive? Well, it doesn't matter, I'm leaving at 10. I'll see you whenever I get there. It's sort of a bizarre thing we've conditioned people into. And the problem is, or we've all experienced this, arriving early is the worst thing. You arrive at an airport early, you don't get home sooner, you don't get to see your family sooner or check into a hotel sooner. You normally find that, yeah, quite understandably, nobody's ready for you. Border force isn't ready, the gates aren't ready, the baggage is not ready because you hadn't planned to be early. So really what it comes down to is on-time performance, but on-time performance measured in terms of arrival rather than departure. Now, it's a big challenge, and I think there's a lot of things we would have to do to make that work, and obviously it would need to be consistently working enough that people didn't then start to feel like, now I have to worry about both ends of my journey. But I think if we could do one thing out of this pandemic, and we've done some experiments with it, and in fact, the perfect flight that Sean was referring to earlier was a good example of that, where we calculated all of those things, it could make a massive difference and remove a huge amount of frustration from the passenger journey as well. I think that would be the biggest thing in all of this. But just to go back to one other point, I didn't mention Border Force earlier when I was talking about resilience, but I was thinking it in my head. There's a big test coming up there, and I think we're all sort of looking forward to half term, in a few weeks' time, with the new rule, with the new travel rules, with the increase in bookings, because that has to go well if we're going to restore customer confidence in travelling and the enjoyment in travelling, which we really need to.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very conscious of the fact that we're going to have so many people who have got lots of questions to ask. So I'm going to just go around each of you and talk about the future and ask, really, do you think that the pandemic has fundamentally changed the industry forever, particularly things like business travel, for example? So, Karen, what are your thoughts on that?
There will be lessons and things that we have learned that no doubt we will continue to apply going forward. Do I think it's changed forever? I'm actually not sure. I think people still want to travel. I think, and there are mixed, I'm no expert on human behaviour, but, I for one would much rather be in the office and meet people face to face. And I think, having been so long on screen, and clearly it's much better than just on the phone, but it's not the same as meeting face to face. And there are lots of things in the business world that you just cannot do, via screen. You can't go and service a nuclear power station, with just on Teams, just in case it breaks down. There are lots of travel. So I think there will be lessons and improvements that we continue to apply. But I don't think, I think we will be back. People want to travel. People want to meet their families. They want to reconnect. So I think it's an optimistic future.
Yeah. Sean, what are your thoughts? Because recalling things that have happened in the past, like, you can't carry liquids onto a flight. And before that would have seemed completely alien. But now everybody's there with their plastic bags and ready to travel and all of that stuff. So do you think that behaviours will change and adapt and we'll get close back to where we were before?
Yeah, well, I think what the pandemic has done is accelerated the use of technology in many parts. So, a couple of examples. We've launched an awful lot of pre-departure capability, be it Right to Fly or Verify, that allow people to upload all of their documents and come to the airport, able to kind of use bag drop and online check-in like they did before. But there's more kind of pre-departure processes that they do at home. So I think it's an acceleration of that. We're also customizing, the experience. We've got Qmatic now at Heathrow, where people can take a time with which they check in rather than stay in a queue and people are liking that a lot. We're also doing things like pre-order capabilities, so you can customize your experience on board. That will actually, I think, make the experience more sustainable, because I think we can eliminate a lot of waste that we upload onto aircraft.
Yeah.
And even things like in the lounge, you sit down now and order from the QR code like you do from a pub. And that's giving us great data and insight into what people want to consume and where they want to sit and when they come in and when they leave. So I think the use of data and technology is quite exciting. I agree with Karen. I think people will, you know, come back because they value travel. You do business face to face. The experience from early markets that recovered, like the US, we saw small businesses in particular came back very quickly because, you know, they're really at the cutting edge of recovering their businesses. And we are seeing the corporate sector as well, I think, in places like the US domestically come back. And, you know, I do think travel is something which innately we love as an experience because it's very important. It's very, very important, I think, to our society as a whole. And people cherish those experiences. But I do think that people will want to do it sustainably in the future. And getting on the front foot with the sustainability agenda for the industry is a must do. And I think we've got to start that now. I know we've already started, but we've got to drive huge energy into that.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Martin, last word to you. How's it going to look in a few years from now? Will it all be rosy, or will we still have a different picture?
Well, I think it'll be much rosier than it is now. And I think, you know, I'm very encouraged by some of the things that Sean was talking about there and looking forward to actually experiencing them as well. I mean, like everybody else, I've done literally no flying at all over the last couple of years and can't wait to get back to it. I think for me, if there's one thing the pandemic has probably taught us, is that we shouldn't take aviation for granted. You know, I think before this, we thought we knew it could be affected. We'd seen the global economic downturn. We saw volcanic ash. But as Sean rightly said, you know, those pale into insignificance compared to what we've just seen. And I don't think any of us ever thought that we would have essentially our freedoms so significantly curtailed. You know, if somebody said to me, you know, you'll be told you won't be allowed out of your house except once a day, you're thinking, well, unless I've moved to another part of the world, which has some very different rules, then I would be really surprised. But we sort of accept it all. So I think there will be a big rebound in terms of people wanting to have that sense of freedom. I think people do enjoy traveling. It's a human spirit thing. There's the business aspect to it. You know, I hold teleconferences, just on video conferences, just like everybody else, with our colleagues in Asia Pacific, Australia, and it isn't the same. The time difference doesn't help. You can't get the nuances. You can't make the new connections. You can't solve problems in the same way. So I genuinely think it will come back. We don't have a decent alternative. This is brilliant, but it's not the same. And I do think technology, this is just another example of how technology has accelerated as part of this. So I think people, though, are going to be quite demanding in the future. They are going to want to have the sustainable flight. They are going to want to know that they are either not increasing their carbon footprint any more than is absolutely necessary, or have a way of appropriately offsetting it, to know that everything is possible, everything possible being done. And I also think we're going to have to do that if we're going to attract the next generation of talent into the industry. Yeah, whenever I talk to our young graduates, you know, new arrivals into the company, it's all about sustainability, making sure that aviation is a poster child for that, rather than being the one that sort of gets beaten with a stick. So I genuinely think it's positive. I think we've got plenty to do. But I think with all of the things that we've talked about here, there is a bright future. It's just going to take a lot of work.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. So I knew it was going to be tough to keep the three of you to anywhere near half an hour of talking. So we're going to dive straight into a few questions if we can. The first one's to Martin, which is from Ari. Do you agree that the investment agenda going forward to modernise airspace, to make it more efficient and sustainable, will be even more important to have a joint investment fund?
So we have something called ACOG, which is the Airspace Change Organising Group. In fact, Karen is one of the sort of founder members and on the steering committee for that. That is doing the job of coordinating airspace modernisation. And it's also actually helped get some sort of seed funding, I think probably the best way of putting it, to keep people going through the pandemic. So where it might have been put on the back burner. In terms of a single investment fund, I think what's probably more important is aligned investments. There's benefits to every single party in the modernisation of airspace, whether it be airports in terms of being able to make better use of capacity, runway capacity, whether it's airlines in terms of shorter routes and lower carbon. whether it's air traffic control in terms of being able to deliver higher capacity in a more efficient way. So I think everybody's got a set of benefits in this, and not least of the ones being we're saving the planet as well. So I don't think it's necessarily about a shared investment fund. I think it's about coordinated investment in the right places at the right time, which ACOG, I think, is doing a pretty good job of at the moment in making sure that it's all aligned.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that, if I may. And I think modernisation is the one thing, and because of everybody is involved, it has to be coordinated. And I do think ACOG's doing a pretty good job on that. One of the things that we have said to government is that, as airports, we have to sort of do the change processes for the lower airspace, and actually we should be kicking those off and are kicking those off now, just at a time when, you know, financially we're in a difficult position. So I think what government has agreed to do is to provide some funding, really as a sort of seed funding, you could call it. It's not really seed funding, but, you know, match funding to keep the project, the big project, keep it going. And I think that's really helpful. And I think, you know, we are going to say to government they need to do a bit more of that for next year, just to keep it, going as we build back, you know, our financial resilience. But, you know, it will involve everyone. Not everyone will be winners, but we hope most people will win. But, you know, there's some way to go yet.
Excellent. Cameron, can we stick with you? Because we've had a question from Adibi, who's talked about the lack of diversity in the industry and what plans we've got in place to tackle those issues.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really challenging one. My entire career has been in transport, and whichever part of transport I've been in, there's always this sort of perceived lack of, not perceived, it is a real lack of diversity. I don't think we're really that much worse than many other sectors. And I think that there is, certainly amongst my members, there is a real commitment to tackling that. And there are all sorts of measures that individual airports have put in place with their staff. There is also, which I know a number of people here are members of, the aerospace, I can't even remember the name now because I'm getting old, but, there is a charter, Women in Aviation and Aerospace Charter, which is doing great things to, you know, bring people together for networking, to share best practice. Ultimately, I my personal view as a sort of, not a recent graduate young woman, but, you know, it does take time. These things do take time. But actually, those policies are beginning to, you are seeing them bear fruit. And we are seeing more women and more, you know, ethnic minorities as well. So it's not just about gender diversity. It's also about ethnicity going forward. And I think, you know, my perception is it's a really welcoming industry. We just need to make sure, like many other, learn from other sectors that are doing it well and get those policies in place.
Great stuff. Thank you very much. So I think we'll give the last one to Sean. And this is from Andy. He says, looking ahead, will air travel ever be truly sustainable? Will we always be offsetting the CO2 emitted? Or could an all-electric aircraft ever be practically realised?
Yeah, I think, if you look at innovation, there are these sort of situations where I think, you know, innovation accelerates a lot more quickly than we expect. Before World War II, planes were flying on propellers, and by the time we came out, we had jet technology, which kind of transformed the industry in the following decades. So I think with the level of sort of focus, investment and innovation going on, there will be breakthroughs. But I think looking at the pathways we got today, you know, okay, where will we get to? Maybe the middle of the next decade, you will see either hybrid electric or hydrogen powered cell aircraft fly, I think, you know, sectors of maybe 90 minutes with seating capacity of up to 100. And then I think, where does that go to in terms of, you know, medium to long haul operations? I think that will take longer. So, to bridge there, we do need sustainable aviation fuel. We do need, I think, as an interim measure, offsets. But I think the offset market could be repurposed into support for carbon capture technology, both static and dynamic. And I think the opportunity to carbon capture in the future is something which is really gaining momentum. And I think, you know, people do criticize offsets as being, you know, fobbing off the issue. You know, they're not actually. I think more fundamentally, it can create a a sort of financial instrument and system that can fund, I think, more radical technologies in the future. But I think we need sustainable fuels. We need innovative technologies. We need carbon capture. I think all of that will take shape at pace over the next 20 or 30 years. But I would say it will take till 2050 before we really see those solutions make aviation truly net zero.
Fantastic. Well, I'm afraid that is truly all we have got time for. I'm sure that these three could have easily gone on for at least another couple of hours. I've just checked my emails. There's no P45 from HR, so thanks for that, Martin, so far. I'd like to thank the three of you for taking part today. I understand that you've all got extremely busy diaries, so giving up of your time to give us such a really interesting insight is really very much appreciated. As ever, you can watch the whole show again on demand, and it will make its way onto the NATS YouTube channels in the next few days. Excitingly, you can now listen to all of our past episodes via a podcast. So just search your usual podcast provider for NATS Altitude, and you'll find us on there. We will be back next month, so keep an eye out for details of that. But for now, from me and our guests, it's time to say goodbye. Goodbye.
This episode of Altitude was brought to you by NATS, the UK's leading air traffic control company. You can find more episodes of the show at nats.aero/altitude.